Bergoglio.
Bergoglio.
It's Bergoglio. Bergoglio.
Oh, you don't say the second G?
No.
All right. Just trying to stay on brand, guys. Hello, and welcome to Jesuitical, a podcast from the poetically young, prosaically hip, and imperfectly lay editors of American media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I'm Ashley McKinless, and I'm joined by Olga Segura.
Hey, guys.
And Zach Davis.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Good. And I'm very excited to share this episode with our listeners.
Yeah, me too.
It was, so you're about to hear our live show with Mary Carr, New York Times best-selling memoirist, poet, and all around just like amazing person. She had a lot of incredible things to say about her own conversion to Catholicism, coming in the midst of depression and alcoholism. It was a really vulnerable conversation that I'm really pumped about.
No, and it was a great event. We had, I think, like over 70 people here at our office in New York.
A couple weeks ago, it was really...
Unfortunately, Olga was sick.
I was not there, so but you guys did there. A really great job. It really is a fantastic interview. You guys are really going to love it.
Yeah. And we also had a fantastic sponsor for the event. The event and this show that we're recording now is sponsored by Catholic Travel Center. They are a proud partner with American Media for 4 years, hosting their pilgrimages to Italy, Spain, and the Holy Land. Catholic Travel Center is the customized pilgrimage specialist, serving the Catholic community for more than 25 years. To organize your organization's next pilgrimage, contact Catholic Travel Center at gocatholictravel.com.
And you guys have been on a couple of these events,
I went
right?
to the Holy Land earlier this year with them, and it was fantastic. Like, Scott is wonderful. The entire team just really takes care of all the pilgrims. And you've been to Spain and Rome, right?
Yeah, I've been to Spain and Rome, and it is a fantastic experience. They really do make it all run very smoothly, which is important when you've got between 30 and 100 pilgrims to watch out for. So check them out at gocatholictravel.com. And what's on tap, Zach?
So we also had a sponsor of beer for this event. So we are drinking beer provided by the Harlem Brewing Company, a local NYC brewery that's got more than 17 years of experience brewing craft brews in the New York area. And so we are all drinking Sugar Hill Golden Ale, which is really great. So thank you. Thank you to them. And that's my favorite kind of beer.
Yes.
Sponsored beer.
Yes. Thank you, Harlem Brewing Company.
So you can find more of their beer at your local retailer, or you can order online at www.harlembrewing.com.
Wow, you guys. So I get sick for 1 week and you guys get all official on me? We got
podcast sponsors now. So we hope you're as excited about these sponsors as we are. They make this show possible along with you guys. So go check them out.
Yes, for sure.
And now it's time for Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to. What's our first story, Zach?
So our first story comes from the NBA playoffs, which
very exciting.
Is among the best times of the year.
Agreed. I agree. I love the NBA playoffs. I'm more excited about the playoffs than I am about March Madness. I'd never get into March Madness, but I love the playoffs.
And so I think you're wondering, how could Zach bring a story from the NBA playoffs?
Well, yes, I am.
So last night, the Philadelphia 76ers closed out their first round series against Miami Heat, 4-1. Maybe definitely, because their star player, Joel, the first Noel Embiid, went to Mass at a local parish this past Sunday. He surprised Mass goers at St. Kevin's Parish at their 5:30 Mass. Reports say that people didn't even notice that a local superstar was coming down until Joel Embiid came down the communion line. There was a kids section, and you saw all the kids' heads turn and went, oh!
Okay, first of all, I've never heard of a St. Kevin's. Second of all, Zach, you give me so much crap for talking about like random Catholics doing nothing special.
And making
now
it a
you
news
bring
story?
This?
Well, one, it was the Olympics. No one cares about the Olympics. That I'm certain of. I can't even remember who we were talking about back then. The NBA, legitimate, the best sport. I also brought this because I did want to ask, what do you think it's like for famous people to go to Mass?
Probably like going to a restaurant.
Yeah, but like...
or maybe not, because the demographic is probably a group, you know, given your the average age of someone at a Catholic mass, there's a good chance they might not recognize Lady Gaga or Stephen Colbert sitting in the pew next to them.
Yeah.
And maybe they celebrities go to like a specific parish that they know all other celebrities go to, right? Because there's no way someone like Joel Embiid, he's 7 feet tall. Like, he's going to get recognized, you know?
But, I mean, he did the thing where he just sort of sat in the back. And it sounds like he was gracious and he, like, met all the kids and shook hands and his faith community propelled him on to victory. Though he's going to have to lose to the Cavs when they eventually meet.
Okay, moving on.
Next story, Ashley.
Monday was the feast of St. George, also known as San Jorge, the namesake of Pope Francis before he was Pope Francis, when he was Jorge Bergoglio. And he celebrated by giving 3,000 servings of gelato away to Rome's neediest residents.
Wow.
So, you know, only bring it if you have enough to share.
It's the best way to celebrate your it's not his birthday, but his name day. I wish we did that more here.
Agreed.
Yeah, name days and birthdays.
Are there any Saints?
Yes, there are. Thank you very much.
Also, Francis is known for this, right? He's done like the laundromat service, the showers.
Mm-hmm.
So, happy feast day. Do you say happy feast day?
Yeah.
Pope Francis,
yeah.
Happy feast. Happy name day. Happy feast name day.
Happy San Jorge Day. Olga, what's next?
So some more news coming out of the Vatican. They've recently become a safe haven for endangered fruits and trees. They added a small orchard to its garden. And the Italian Tree Conservation Association, known as Patriarchi della Natura, they are the ones who made this donation. And it's a whole part of this initiative to preserve plants and fruits that are endangered. So this is very much in line with Pope Francis's mentality. We know he did Laudato Si.
Yeah. No, yeah. And they've got fig trees and plum trees and pomegranate trees. So a lot healthier than gelato.
Yeah. And one of them is a St. John pear tree and a St. John plum tree, which is it's kind of fun because both are named that because the fruit ripens around June 24th, which is the feast of St. John the Baptist.
Yeah.
And so the Laudato Si, the green pope, comes back again with some fruit sapling trees in his garden.
I thought you were going to do a pun there, and I'm kind of just... I was waiting for it.
So, you may find this surprising, but sometimes I start sentences in hopes that a pun will come to me in the middle of it, and then when nothing happens, you get weird endings like that for me. All right, so... Next story.
Pope Francis has made a historic decision appointing 3 women, 2 Italians and 1 Belgian, as consultants to the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. So this is one of the, if not the most powerful congregation at the Vatican. They're the ones who, you know,
it's the oldest.
It goes back to the Inquisition when the Catholic Church had to decide who was a heretic and who wasn't. Mm-hmm. So they're still doing that.
Right. And this is pretty historic, right? Because this is the first time.
Yeah. No. So Pope Francis had appointed women to another congregation, the one for laity. But this is seen as kind of a bigger deal because these are theologians who they are going to have input as to like what can be said under the label Catholic, which is important.
And it's also the first time any lay person has been appointed as a consultant to this group. So it seems like, but the question, I guess, is, are consultants, are they heard in general for Vatican congregations?
Yeah, it's unclear from what we have read just how much say they will have. I mean, obviously, they cannot overrule the decision of the cardinal who heads the CDF. But this is in line with Pope Francis's goal to bring more women into positions of authority at all levels at the church, but especially at the Vatican, where, you know, it's within his power to appoint women. There's nothing in canon law or tradition or doctrine that prevents him from doing this. So, you know, we'll see whether it's more symbolic or substantive, but it's, I mean, a step in the right direction, I would say.
And I know a way he could get appoint 2 more women to congregations is if when they start the congregation for podcasting, I'm making a play for Jesuitical to serve as official consultants.
I like that.
I like that a lot.
Yes.
What's next, Olga?
So now moving on to the Philippines, Patricia Fox is a sister who has been arrested and detained. Authorities claim that she has allegedly engaged in illegal political activities. She's been working in rural communities in the Philippines for 27 years, and she's been accused of being an undesirable, quote unquote, undesirable alien for joining protest rallies and visiting political prisoners. And Sister Fox has said, hey, this is what sisters do. We go out to marginalized communities and we help these people. Like, we can't just stay away from this.
Yeah. Illegal political activities, also known as...
helping the poor.
Yes.
Right, right.
And the prosecutor in charge found no probable cause for the arrest, but the immigration officials are still insisting upon her deportation. So solidarity with Sister Patricia.
Yeah. And we have another story about Catholic people being persecuted, right?
Yeah, our last story is, we're bringing a story from Mexico, something we wanted to highlight. The murder of two more priests in Mexico in the last week are raising questions over why so many church leaders are being killed in Mexico, which is such a devout Catholic country. The Reverend Juan Miguel Contreras Garcia became the 23rd church leader killed in a string of violent attacks since 2012. And the fourth priest murdered in Mexico this year. He was shot down last Friday night as he was listening to confessions.
Do they have any idea about why there's this spike in violence against Catholics specifically?
So there are some experts who are noting that Catholics are being more outspoken in government opposition, and also they're being way more outspoken in the drug trade. Which in some parts of Mexico is a very, very has a very stronghold in the area. And so a lot of times it's seen as intimidation killings or retaliation killings for speaking out against these things.
And it harkens back to last week when we talked about the canonization of Oscar Romero, who similarly spoke out against the civil war in his country and was killed while saying mass. So we unfortunately have more martyrs maybe in Mexico, but we'll be praying for them and for the flock there.
Yeah, amen.
So this episode is a little bit weird. We did our Consolations and Desolations with Mary Carr at the live event. So Olga is not going to have one this week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure
Correct.
She has one saved for next week.
Of course.
And we're also saving our listener feedback for next week. So if you joined us on Patreon, you'll be getting your special shout out next week, not this week.
Wait, are you saving Consolations and Desolations?
I have like...
yeah. Do you not have some...
No, it's supposed to happen in your week.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Like last 7 days.
You're being pretty judgmental.
Yeah,
about
and sometimes
that.
Something can happen in one week and extend to the following week if you're still thinking about
that
it.
That is Jesuitical.
That's a... Yeah. It's very Jesuitical of me. Stretch. Watch me stretch.
This week, we are talking to Mary Carr, an award-winning poet and New York Times best-selling author. Her poems have been published in The New Yorker, The Atlantic, and The Paris Review, among many other places. Her trilogy of memoirs, The Liars Club, Cherry, and Lit, chronicle her traumatic childhood in Southeast Texas, her turbulent coming of age as a woman and poet, her marriage and motherhood, alcoholism and recovery, and conversion to the Catholic faith. Today, she teaches literature at Syracuse University, and her latest collection of poems is Tropic of Squalor, and it's out this May. Welcome to Jesuitical, Mary.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Thank you.
I thought we could maybe start with a reading of poetry. That seems natural. Yes.
Oh, yeah, people hate, love that. Get them in a room and read to them when they can't leave. This is from a long poem in sections called The Less Than Holy Bible. And it's the voice of God. In case you wonder what God sounds like, I'm here to tell you. The voice of God. 90% of what's wrong with you could be cured with a hot bath, says God through the manhole covers. But you want magic to win the lottery you never bought a ticket for. Tenderly, the monks chant. Embrace the suffering. The voice never panders, offers no 5-year plan, no long-term solution, no edicts from a cloudy white beard hooked over ears. It is small and fond and local. Don't look for your initials in the geese honking overhead or to see through the glass, even darkly. It says the most obvious stuff. Put down that gun. You need a sandwich.
So this really resonated with the host of Jesuitical, because often when Zach gets hangry, we say,
I fall in a spiral of desolation if I haven't.
And
he
just needs a sandwich.
Yeah. So it is a good reminder. This is a good segue into our first question. So you were brought to prayer, which you chronicle in your memoirs, because you tried everything else to stop drinking.
I couldn't stop drinking. If I could have kept drinking, I would have kept drinking. I loved drinking. I was excellent at it, I thought. And for a long time, it really worked for me. I could outdrink my big 6'5" Harvard hockey playing husband. And then I somehow crossed over to the dark side, and I just liked it better than everything else I could think up to do. That's the terrible thing about alcohol or any drug, is that it really works. Like, it works. You feel a little crummy, you have a drink, you feel better. And then, but it didn't keep going that way. So, yeah.
And what brought you to prayer?
Somebody suggested to me, when I couldn't quit drinking after I'd driven into something that had more molecular density than I do, and I had a baby, so you can't be driving around drunk. It's like you're the bad mom in the after school special. So this person said to me, I'd never been baptized. I'd never gone to any church. I'd never had a spiritual practice. I really, when I was a little girl, my parents didn't believe in God. I just thought it was horse hockey. I could not have believed less. You never met anybody more pure agnostic than I was. And somebody suggested to me, well, why don't you pray every day for 30 days and see if your life gets better? Get on your knees every day. And I was like, what kind of God wants me to get on my knees and grovel? And she said, you don't kneel for God, you fill in the blank. and I said, well, then why do you, what is y'all are, you know, some kneeling individuals. Like, what do y'all put?
Especially Catholics.
It's like, yeah. What are y'all into? Like, I don't get it. You know, I'm short enough. And she said, you do it to remind yourself all the stuff that you don't have any control over. And I just went like, oh. But I prayed every day for 30 days. And initially I prayed making obscene gestures at the sky and the light fixture.
Those count as prayers, yeah. I think.
No, I think they do. Yeah. And I later met a Jesuit who said, you know,
they definitely do.
They definitely, it's definitely. And I started to feel something. Something started to happen.
And when you were doing those first prayers, besides the obscene gestures, what were you saying?
Initially, it was like a dance move where I would get on my knees and I would say in the morning, and I would literally throw my slippers under the bed to remember to get on my knees in the morning. I would get out of bed, I would reach under the bed, and then I'd be down there anyway. I'd go, dear God, I don't believe in, you know, help me stay sober today. And then at night I'd go, dear God, I don't believe in, thanks for keeping me sober. That's literally, it was that long.
Was there a moment when it changed from being kind of faking it until you make it?
I got really desperate, because I really wanted to drink, and everybody else was drinking, and all of a sudden it looked so bright and shiny and sparkly. And then the young woman who was a Harvard social theorist and kind of a smarty pants who was telling me to do this said, what do you, and I told her how I was praying. She's like, is that all you ask for? I said, well, what do you pray for? And she said, I pray for a joyous day filled with serenity. And I was like,
you can ask for that?
Yeah, that's what I said. It's in my sentence exactly. You can ask for that. And she said, well, what do you really want? And I said, money. I said, I made $9,000 this year teaching in the academic ghetto around Boston. I need to generate more income. She said, well, why don't you pray for money? So I did. So I got on my knees. I would say, dear God, I don't believe in, keep me sober today. Plus, I'd like some money. And 3 weeks after I started doing this, somebody I'd never met called me about something I'd never applied for and gave me $35,000.
Hey.
Now, I've been asking that same question for for almost 30 years. Never has that happened to me again.
So this isn't a formula.
Yeah. I was about to say, that sounds like a lot more than the sandwich you ask for at the end of that prayer.
No, if I thought y'all would get money, I'd tell you to ask for money too. No, I mean, but it was great because the woman who was telling me to do it said, well, you must believe in God because this guy you never heard of called you and gave you $35,000. I said, no, because they would have nominated me for this like before I started praying. And she said, well, okay, what percentage possibility is it that your prayer, your blind hope out into the universe, tugged some judge's heart and thought, poor little Mary Carr. God bless her down there on her knees in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Let's just throw $35,000 at her. And she said, what percentage possibility is that? I said, 0.5% Is that possible? She said, okay.
There's a chance.
So there's a chance that prayer changes things.
Yeah. And you did, you've done, we're a Jesuit heavy crowd here. You did the spiritual exercises,
I
right?
I did the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius with Father Joe Neville and Sister Maurice May at the Spiritual Renewal Center in Syracuse, New York. And I do the exam and pretty much, I try to do it every day, which means I probably do it 3 times a week.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Beats me.
Also, yeah.
I do centering prayer every day, but I probably do the exam 3 times a week. And
What did you find in the Ignatian tradition that worked for you?
I didn't get Jesus. I noticed my son, the way I even wound up in church, my son, who was then about 8, said he wanted to go to church. And I said, why? Like that, why? And he said, to see if God's there. Hmm. And it was literally like the only sentence he could have said that would have gotten me on a Sunday morning to put my paper aside, get up and get my britches on. And we went to all these different churches. We called it God-O-Rama, where we just...
God-O-Rama.
We just visit... any friend we had who went to some place, we would go with. And then I found this little... Catholic parish. And if you had told me I was going to, I mean, in my book, I say, if you told me I was going to be a Catholic, I'd say I had a better chance of being a, you know, stripper or a drug mule. it was embarrassing to become Catholic.
Is that because of your upbringing, because of the poet community you're
in?
Well,
I mean, you think you're going to be in some kind of like hippie kind of religion, mm-hmm. right? Like the Unitarians or one of those, you know. Yeah. Today's gospel is from Glamour magazine. and it wasn't the ritual that got me. Everybody said, oh, it's the ritual, it's the ritual. That kind of bored me. I kind of like that more now. But it was really the simple faith of the people. It was people saying their intentions. When people would call out in mass in this little church I went to, you know, pray for my son who's in the war. And you go, oh, my Lord, that I would walk in, I would look at everybody and think, who are these people? I have nothing in common with these people. And I would have a cup of coffee and I would sit in the back and grade papers. And then there's a woman saying, my son's in the war. And you look at her face and your heart flies out of your chest at her. And somebody saying, you know, I had a kid who just came out of surgery, or, you know, somebody lost their parent. And to see all that hope and all that suffering stated so plainly. I mean, every time people said their intentions, I would stop creating papers and weep.
Once you became a Catholic, how did your peers respond?
You cannot imagine the things people said to me. Richard Ford sent me a postcard that the novelist said, not you on the Pope's team, Carr. Say it ain't so.
That was one of your hangups when you joined, right, though? Like, you didn't see the Pope as the ultimate authority?
What I said to the priest before I was baptized was, I said, Father Joe, well, first off, I lied to him before he baptized me.
Good start.
No, good start. It was great. It was
why we have confession.
It was right before Easter, and the woman who was going to be my son's godmother was not Catholic, and he said, well, you know, you have to be Catholic to take communion. I said, I know all that. And he's like, so is Dev's godmother Catholic? And I went, yes. The lie just fell out of my face. And then I get in my corner. I'm like, damn it, damn it, damn it. And I go home and I pick up the phone. I say, okay, I lied to you. He said, hello. And I said, okay, I lied to you. I don't want to start my, I don't want to start my relationship with the Catholic Church this way. I feel really bad about it. And, but I just want to say that I think, that I don't think Jesus would have a dinner party and not let Deb Larson, who had a stroke and takes care of HIV positive babies and is head injured and can barely walk. I don't think somebody would look at her and say, she can't have our bread. And I said, do you feel that way? He's like, well, I'm just a parish priest. And I said, I said, you know what? Put that right back where you got it. I said, you're the face of the Catholic Church right now to me. You're it. You and all those people whom I love and have come to love, and you're the person I have to talk to. And I just want to say, he said, I'm sure the Holy Father prays about that a lot. And I said, and that's another thing. I don't think the Pope is the ultimate religious authority. And he paused and he said, maybe you will someday.
And dare I ask?
Yeah, I would say I'm very devoted to Pope Francis. Yeah. I would say I'm
well, that you called and admitted that you lied showed that Catholic guilt comes very easily to you.
I'm a natural. Yeah. Well, no, what was the great thing was I went through this whole apology and I said, and I lied, and she's not Catholic. And then I go into this whole thing. He's like, okay, who is this? Okay, it's okay. Who is this?
So how do you deal with some of those tensions, like with this authoritative church, which authoritative teachings, and has it been easier with people like this parish priest in your life to sort of talk?
He was an amazing person because he was a very right-wing guy who preached.
And you would consider yourself not?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm not very right-wing, but I mean, but he listened to Rush Limbaugh, this guy, and he had gay and lesbian masses. I asked him on his deathbed, I said, why did you do that? And he said, because they asked me. They came and asked if they could pay me to meet in our church. And I was like, well, why don't we have masses with you? Would you like a mass for your organization? And they said, yes. And so he was an interesting guy because in some way he was not who you would expect. I think he was one of those people who took informed conscience very seriously, because on the altar, he offered my friend communion. Even though and I wish I'd asked him before he died if he remembered if he remembered she wasn't Catholic. So what I tell people is what I tell them. I say, look, you know, I'm an American and I don't love everything our country is doing. But it's a country that permits a lot of opinions. And you know, I'm proud to be an American. I vote and I participate in the political process. And I feel the same way about the Catholic Church.
You mentioned Pope Francis, who, you know, in his first interview with the press, when they asked him, who is Jorge Bergoglio? He said, I am a sinner. And that was what you said. That was on the sign outside the church you wandered into, right? Sinners welcome.
Well, that was another church. Father Joe retired and we got the priest with the toupee. And then I said, this is not good for my spiritual life. I sit here wanting to snatch that toupee off his head every day. And so I got involved with a church that when you walked in, they had hung a banner over the front of the church, like in a car park, like when they're having a big sale, you're 20% off of everything. And it said, sinners welcome. And I just thought, boy, this is the place for me. Because I always thought you had to be holy to go to church, right? I mean, you read the Gospels. That was the other thing the Ignatian exercises did for me. I wanted to get back to that. Was I noticed once I was a Catholic that the people who were always, you know, making jello and going to see people and building things and giving away the cribs and taking the pregnant girls in and doing all of that, they talked about Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. It's all they talked about. And I literally said to Father Cain, I don't get Jesus. I don't get this. My idea of hell is somebody ripping his shirt open and saying, this, look what I did for you. I don't like that thing. I don't like it. But I noticed that all the really cool people talked about Jesus all the time. The people they seemed to me, the people who are really into Jesus seemed two things. They seemed loving and realistic. Like they weren't sort of drippy and soppy. Mm-hmm. You know, they were just like, oh, yeah, you know, this happened. You know, they accepted that people were sinning, I think.
Yeah.
And, but they also practiced a lot of charity. And I was very interested in Dorothy Day and tradition. I found for myself that working with the poor, working in a soup kitchen, trying to help people who lost their kids get their kids back, that working with young mothers trying to get sober, that really, for me, was where I felt Jesus most present in my life. I began to get this sense of Jesus from doing the exercises.
And you mentioned, you know, Sinners Welcome, that's good. These people who were doing all these things, helping you understand Jesus more, understood that people were sinning. Do you think enough Catholics think of themselves as sinners?
Or that people who aren't Catholics think of Catholics as sinners? Because I've read all of these like interviews with you and you're like described as like an unlikely Catholic. And I'm like, if you think someone that like curses and used to drink a lot is an unlikely Catholic.
That's right.
You haven't met enough Catholics.
Haven't met enough priest. Yeah. I'm not a joiner. I don't know how to tell you. I don't color in the lines. I don't even know how to. But I think the thing that I found, even in very, like, what's the parish, the Catholic Information Center down in D.C.? What's the name? Is it Opus Dei?
Oh, yeah.
Opus Dei.
I went down there and gave a talk, and a friend of mine was a Dominican novice near there. And he said, you know, I'll meet you. I'll come hear your talk. And I said, okay. And then I told him where I was talking. And he says, do they know who you are? And I said, I don't know. Who are they? And he said, well, this is kind of a right-wing, you know, organization. I said, well, I don't know. My lecture agent booked this. They invited me. I don't know. And he actually went to the bookstore and talked to the people there before I got there, saying to them, do you know who she is? Like, are you sure you understand? And it was funny because I got there early and I hadn't been to confession in a while. And I went to confession and I got to do it the way that, like in The Godfather, where you get on your knees in the little place and it's all spooky and everything. And I told the guy I was a convert and kind of an idiot. And then I forgot my act of contrition. I could just see Father Joe, you know, the priest who baptized me, saying, you forgot your act of contrition. But I don't know. Those people were very nice to me. I don't know how to explain. I'm sure we differ in many ways, but I just, you know, we are the body of Christ. I mean, for all our dissent and disagreement, we come together in hope, right? Isn't that the radical, dangerous
thing? Will know we are Christians by our love.
Right? Well, that's...
Well, and so when you do something like that, or when you write memoirs that I imagine were painful to write, laying all of this out, but that people might relate to, do you see that as a ministry, or
Do I see myself bringing people to Christ? You know, it's funny. I guess I have gotten a lot of mail from people saying, you know, I never believed in God. I never went to church. And, you know, I began to pray, or I had left the church and I didn't think I would be welcomed back. People who left, you know, long, long ago. And my experience of Catholicism has been very loving. I have not had anybody wrap my knuckles with a ruler. That's not true. I did meet a guy. I met a guy in the south of France who told me
heretic?
Heretic was the word he used. I had given a talk on prayer and meditation, and I suggested that as the Ignatian, you know, how else would God call to you except, if you created the universe, wouldn't you call to people in prayer? Wouldn't you call to your people in their imaginations and in their desires and in their bodies? That all desire is not an evil thing, that it's also a leaning and something that's kind of hardwired in us, and wouldn't God speak to us that way? And afterwards, he was a cardinal, this guy. He was a big kahuna. And
that is the Latin term, I believe.
It's the Latin term. And afterwards he said, you know, I think you're a heretic and a Gnostic. He said this in front of a lot of people. I said, oh, a heretic, probably. I said, if I were a Gnostic, I would know something. And I don't think really I know very much. I'm just kind of trying to be less of a jerk every day. And this is part of that struggle.
We have time for one more question, at least from Ashley and I. We ask all of our guests this. If you could canonize one person, living or dead, Catholic or not, who would it be and why?
Oh, that's really hard. You know, right now I'm listening a lot to Thomas Merton, that old sinner. and it'd be a toss-up between him and Dorothy Day, I guess. They're both American. They both kind of speak my language. I mean, Michael Jordan didn't play basketball anymore, so that was a joke. I don't know. I mean, that's such a cliche. Those are both such cliches.
But what language do they speak that you share?
I mean, Merton, for his humor and his knowledge of history and literature and his love of literature, and Dorothy for her care for the poor. There was a homeless guy outside my apartment this week who was, or a few weeks ago, screaming, "Murder or suicide!" You know, murder or suicide, like just this, you know, voice crying in the wilderness. And I thought, that could be John the Baptist. And I walked up to him and I said, isn't there like a door number 3? Some ways I'd like to canonize him in a way.
So Saints Thomas Merton, Dorothy Day, and guy outside
murder
your apartment.
Murder or suicide.
Yeah. So the next part of our show is going to be Consolations and Desolations. This is the part of our show, it's our attempt at faith sharing. It's where we share where we found God this week or where it's been difficult to find God. I'll start. I have a consolation. So I have been meaning to call my mother for like 2 weeks now. So first thing I want to say is call your mom. The second thing was I had been away for the weekend and I got back last night and there was a package waiting for me and my mom had sent me this copy of your book with a little note that said, hoping you haven't read this one. Wanted to give you a little time to read it before Wednesday. I'm sure it will be amazing. Love you, Mom. And so...
And you haven't called her in 2 weeks?
Yep. So this is the consolation is that, you know, even when I'm, you know, being a terrible son, my mom is still like this image of divine love where it's unconditional and always surprising me. And
she knows she loves her.
Yeah. Oh, thanks, Mary.
She does. You don't just, you know, you're a young man. This is what young men do. They don't call their mothers. It's how you all guys are. She understands. She knows who you are. She knows she loves her.
So that's my consolation this week.
Aw.
Ashley, do you have one?
Zach, why did you make me go after you?
That's a tough one to beat.
Yeah, and I'm a desolation. I thought it'd be weird if we
Why don't you talk about the desolation then? What's your desolation?
We do a spiritual some formation with our director Eric beforehand, and he's like, "Are you sure you want to say this in front of a crowd of people?" And now I wish I had listened to him. Okay, so my desolation this week is. So I've had this like very busy winter and spring where I've been traveling like every single weekend, like I've been to Vegas and Chicago and Boston. And this last weekend, I was finally going to be home in New York. And I was talking to our producer, Eloise, before the weekend. I was like, I'm so looking forward to just like relaxing and doing nothing this weekend. And then when the weekend came around, I was like terrified of being alone in my apartment. And I just got on a bus and went back to Virginia to see my family because I couldn't stand being alone here. And so like that's fine. That's what I do. The desolation part was then I like lied about it to Eloise and to Zach. They like asked me what I did last week and I was like, I just like read and caught up on stuff and it was really nice.
But did you feel better going home? That's my question.
I did. I really love being with my family.
I wish I could have said the same.
Yeah. So yeah, So yeah, that was certainly consoling. But I guess the desolation is like this embarrassment and shame about like not being able to talk to people that I know love me about my loneliness, and not even being able to talk to like God about it, because just like I keep it back here and put on a front that everything's good.
I think loneliness in America is so hard to admit to, and there's so much of it, though, exactly because of the shame around it. And I think it's funny, when you said that, I was thinking about my own sense of loneliness, and I feel very close to you. Like, if the consolation I'm feeling is right now looking at your beautiful face, your little bird black eyes, and I think that you gave me permission to feel my own loneliness, and that's... I mean, genuinely, I'm very moved by that. And so I think most of us are lonely most of the time, I think. And even, you know, you can be in the middle of the best family in the world and have a terrible loneliness. You can be lonely in marriage. You can be lonely with your children, you know, so.
Yeah. Thanks.
Mary, do you have a consolation or desolation?
I think that was my consolation, I think.
Yeah. Can I have a hug?
Yeah. Oh.
Can come live at my house on 83rd Street. And you know what? We'll just read and we won't talk, and we'll call out for pizza, and then like we'll talk to Jesus a little while. And
murder suicide really guy.
Yeah, that's right. Go meet with the murder suicide guy. What was great though was when I said to him, isn't there a door number 3? He was like looking at the sky when I walked away.
Wow.
Jesuitical is brought to you by American Media and produced by Eloise Blondio. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup, SJ. Engineering and design by Angelou Jesus Canta. Adverbs provided by Eloise Blondio. You can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show. Please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and leave us a review. It's super easy to do. Send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americanmedia.org. For American Media, I'm Ashley McKinless with Zach Davis. And one more thing, this show was made possible by the Catholic Travel Center, proud partner with American Media to organize your organization's next pilgrimage. Contact Catholic Travel Center at gocatholictravel.com. For American Media, I'm Ashley McKinless with Zach Davis and Mary Carr. Thank you all for coming, and see you next week.